Hello, and welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, Season 5. I don't know what episode. I've got no idea. My name's Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
Rookie, what episode are we on? Are we like 6 or no? No, we can't be 6.
I think 9, you'll put it in 12, the chat. Something.
You'll put 8. Oh my God. Okay, that's good for Season 5, Episode 8. So how's it going, boys?
Tired.
It's going.
Why are you tired, Collins?
We got heavy machinery at our house every morning at 7 a.m.
Okay.
Every morning.
You're not up by 7?
Oh, yeah. Getting back from my run then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Look at that shack, Jeff.
I know.
Yeah, it's nice and echoey. You can hear it.
Well, when you get furniture in there, it'll absorb some of the sound.
Look at this.
It's already finished.
Conference table. Here's my full. I'm not fucking around.
No.
I just haven't cleared off my desk, so I had to turn it around.
Okay.
That's serious business.
But we are officially in our house. That's why I got the podcast, the left-handed
one. Oh, cheers.
Good on you, brother.
There. 2 weeks of nonstop moving with a minivan. Woo!
Nice.
That's your problem.
Okay.
Today I want to give a shout out to my son, Ryder Collins. Brandon made him famous for bitching about all his followers on Twitter.
Yeah, 1 billion followers he's got now.
136,000.
How much?
136,000, but he's 13 today.
That's insane. Happy birthday, Ryder.
Happy birthday, Ryder.
Teenager.
Yeah. He's been a tweenager for a while, and he's a good kid, though.
So now we start cutting the lawn today, right?
We don't have a lawn. He loves it. So we're taking him to, the Falls View with 6 of his buddies from his ball team. We're going to go hit the water slides today, indoors.
Nice.
Is that that ass kid of yours that dunked me in the tank?
Yes, it is.
he loves
to do. That's all he wanted to do again today. He pushed you in the canal.
Well,
is that for the wise kids? You mean?
Yeah. That was wise kids a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was like 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
Well, yeah, it's at least 3 years ago. Yeah,
last year's don't count. So
it was 2019.
Brand, you want to give a shout out to Wise Kids events at all? Or
yeah. So for our listeners and our watchers, you know, the four of us are fairly tied to a local Niagara charity in Ontario.
Well, as Trevor says,
Wise Guys.
You donate.
You just bring a checkbook.
You bring the checkbook, and that's all that really matters. Let's be honest. It's good. You donate.
I donate Blue Mountain every year.
Yeah, you do.
And Trevor reneged on the RV dump situation.
I did.
Bitched right out. Didn't want to.
There you go.
Nope. Said no thank you to charity. I don't care.
Doesn't matter. Right, Collins? Like, that is such a.
It's
self-absorbed.
Poo-poo. Oh, no.
I know.
Everybody shits.
What's his personal preference above charity?
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so the four of us are big into it. So there's 3 divisions of the charity. There's the men's only golf tournament. There's the women's only golf tournament, which was held just this past Monday. A full flight. Yeah, 144 women golfed at St. Catharines Golf and Country Club, private golf course. It was a great day. And there's Wise Kids. And we also have a roast happening at the end of September, which is more like a Don Rickles roast. So it's not like your Comedy Central roast. So it's a little bit more. Collins, Lindy, but
it's the Royal
PG.
Royal Opinion.
Yeah, but it's not X-rated. It's not like Comedy Central, right? Like
Margie Spence gonna get roasted this year. And Sally McGar.
Yeah, Margie Spence, good. Sally McGar, the lady pioneers in the
Niagara region, really. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Brandon
comes down to
hard for that. He's got to get props because
Brad's actually in India right now, raising money for Habitat for women's shelter right now. There, he's doing a big motorcycle tour.
Oh wow!
They're over $100,000 they've raised so far.
Well, is it like a 13 country thing or something like that? Or
I think they're just doing India this year.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I just ride a moped, so me joining that tour would be a little bit creepy. These guys are all driving cruisers and stuff. And I almost died on a moped, so. What's that?
Those e-bikes?
Oh yeah, those little Dumb and Dumber bikes. They're killer.
Shout out to Brandon because he works really hard on the ropes, not Brandon.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Bondo. I did. Thank you. Appreciate that. But you guys also all buy tables and attend, so it's all good. Hey, you know, it's all good. I appreciate it.
No, you could have worked.
Hey, there's you know, in the essence of time, because we do have pretty much a hard stop today, because we all have, just because as everyone's probably watching and listening, everybody is probably drinking through a fire hose right now, trying to get, you know, everything up and running. I think Trevor's on camping detail 900 this summer already. Have you worked this summer, Trev?
No, not at all.
No, you haven't. I just wanted to ask.
No, I just I pack it in.
Yeah,
I'm done today. 12 o'clock.
So anyway, but Trev, I want to start off with this. We're going to go into incorrect mortgage advice, but we will not name the financial institution because, well, one, I just don't want to get sued. And two, even though our lawyer friend, Rob would totally back us. Right. But it is an article that we read, all four of us, and that Trevor, I'm sure you get. And this is going to layer into the Bear Trust, which will loop in Bondo nicely. And Collins, you can pipe in here with regards to the article. The article was in the Daily Hive, which is, it pulls from different areas. But anyway, the long and short of it is one of the big fives. Clients were shopping back in February of 2022, they did not deal with a mortgage broker.
They went direct to the FI.
That's right. They went direct to the financial institution. Thank you, Trev. And, they try to do different financial institutions themselves. And then, they settled on this one particular financial institution because of advice that they were given that, their variable rate that they were, applying for their mortgage, back in February 2022, because there was rumors of interest rate increases, and that they had a capped variable rate mortgage versus an adjustable variable rate mortgage. This inaccurate information, complete misunderstanding by the bank teller, essentially, the advisor at the bank. They didn't know what they were talking about. And it resulted in now, after I don't know how many interest rate increases by the Bank of Canada, a $400 increase to these particular clients' mortgage payments every month. And there's nothing that they can do about it because their lawyer, who closed the file, told them this is not a capped variable rate mortgage. This is an adjustable. They called the bank and the bank's, no. This advisor's like, no, you're good. Don't worry about it. I'm confident. Trev, can you just tell, I want Trevor and then I want Bondo's opinion on this, please. Because I think the lawyer did do the best in their ability, but the difference between first a capped and an adjustable variable rate mortgage.
Yeah, so essentially the capped rate mortgage or the cap variable is very much like a true variable rate mortgage. So we've talked about it on other episodes in the past, the difference between variable and adjustable. So variable rate, your payment is going to be static. It will not change. If it's $1,000 a week, it's going to remain at $1,000 a week. If the interest rate moves within the product because you're in a variable, all that's going to happen is the amount that goes towards principal versus interest will vary. And then there's going to be a couple of basically target rates and what have you, which the article discusses, just about hitting like a certain threshold within the payment before it's going to require you to have your payment adjusted. Otherwise, it's going to add to the tail end of your mortgage. It's going to start extending the amortization. So essentially, you know, a 25-year amortization, you exceed that threshold, you don't change your payment, you pay for 5 years, and all of a sudden you find out 5 years from now when it's up for renewal that you have another 25 years still to pay for it. So that static payment, again, is a true That's what makes it a variable rate. An adjustable rate mortgage, which a lot of lenders. What's that?
The Kohl's notes on that though for the variable is your payment stays the same, but essentially the amount that gets allocated to interest versus principal at the end of the day is what changes, right?
Correct. Yep. Yeah, exactly. It'll fluctuate along the way. So the adjustable rate mortgage, on the other hand, as the Bank of Canada moves, the payment will change. So for simplicity's sake, you're looking at about $13 per $100,000 that you have borrowed in a payment change anytime the Bank of Canada moves by a quarter point, right? So we've already had 2.25% rate increase in 2022 already, and we have our next meeting coming up on September 7th. So who knows what's really going to happen there? So that's the interesting dynamic that a lot of people don't realize, where we've got variable and adjustable, and they were dealing with, in fairness, they were dealing with a mobile mortgage specialist or a home financing advisor, a mortgage development manager, the fancy terms that the banks and lenders, banks and credit unions essentially give to their mortgage professionals. Problem is, at the end of the day, that article reads that the sales manager was involved in the transaction and basically just threw their hands up and said, you know what, too bad, so sad, there's nothing we can do about it. And you know, the scary reality is the government, you know, Consumer Protection, Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, I should say, is really there to protect consumers. Obviously, there's different channels you can go through. But, you know, it's, you know, the article was actually, you know, difficult to read in respect to the accountability piece, right? As a licensed mortgage agent in the province of Ontario, the process, the compliance, the disclosure, the level of care, essentially, that I have to go through with my clients to have them fully understand what they're actually getting themselves into. And unfortunately, the banks don't have that, or the credit unions. There is no accountability. It comes down to the institution themselves. So essentially, if I screw up as a broker, and doesn't matter, pick a TD Bank, we'll say, I'm doing a deal for TD, I screw up the transaction, at the end of the day, it is TD's going to tell that client, deal with me, go to the Financial Services Regulatory Authority of Ontario. That's the avenue that they'll do. Whereas when it's in-house, they've got the Office of the President, the Ombudsman, different bodies to kind of go through. But I guess the best way to put it is they do a better job protecting their employees than they would a broker, because obviously it's an employee versus an independent contractor. And yeah, these clients were put into a really, really bad position.
Now, in this case, did the borrower have any emails or anything, or is it just verbal when they got all this confirmation that it would be working? And then they went
back. My understanding is there was information exchanged via email.
And like it still didn't protect them?
No, because
it was just vague. It was vague information.
It doesn't even, the way the article reads is it wasn't even that it was vague information. It was that this is the product you got. You went to the lawyer. You signed the documents.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now
you're on the hook.
Yeah. Now, see, my concern in the situation and reading the article is, what if the clients are pretty shit? And they're just upset now because they have interest rates. Nobody's happy that prime's gone to where it has. And sure. I'll give you a tangible example. My colleague and partner has a line of credit where he's paying interest only on it. The payment 4 months ago was literally half of the payment that he's paying now.
Well, I got an example too with private lending. You and John are setting us up for a private mortgage right now on some townhouses me and my partner are building. 2 months ago, we agreed to 8% private lending, And I said, look, to expedite it, I'll have John and Josh do the paperwork, the mortgage commitment. They did it all, gave it to the other lawyer. The other lawyer said he was too busy. I'll get to it. No problem.
Which is very interesting because the lender that you normally drafts the commitment, right? Because it's
exactly. So I knew interest rates are going up. And so I tried to expedite it so we could lock in the 8% that was agreed to. We got the paperwork last week. They went to 10. They said, we got to pass it on. And so we've kind of fought back and said, this is bullshit. We were ready to sign 2 months ago. Our lawyers prepared everything. You guys slacked off. They're like, well, there's nothing we can do. We got to pass on the money. So I'm trying to get a compromise at 9% right now. No response at all. So I don't know what's going on.
So I guess, you
2% of $1 million, 1.5, like 2% of that.
Yep.
No, Sorry about that. There you go. Oh, great.
Oh, wait, we just got... hey, Melissa, how's it going? Thanks for watching us live. You found us. So Trev, I agree with you. This article was very difficult to read because it was the I don't effing care. I get this all the time on the financial institution side with the investments. The amount of people that come through my door... that say things like, why would I use a tax-free savings account when I can only get a GIC? Or, why, I had literally a call 2 hours ago with a client, basically about the home buyer's plan, right? And, walking him through that. And he didn't know that he had to pay the $35,000 back. He didn't know he had to, that was ammed over 15 years. He didn't know that initially it was interest-free and all this type of stuff. But he dealt with the bank, he didn't deal with a mortgage broker. He does his own taxes. So he doesn't deal with an accountant, and this is where, people think that they know the ins and outs. And the fact of the matter is, this is why you deal with professionals, but it is a huge frustration. And I can very much appreciate how you, Trev, and especially Bondo, especially hearing that the lawyer did the right thing. They said, hey, this is not it, like, why would you listen to a mobile mortgage specialist than a lawyer who's reviewing the documents?
Honestly, a lot of it comes down to trust, right? Like, if they've got the trust with that mortgage professional and they've only been introduced to the lawyer through the transaction, whether it be the real estate agent or the mortgage professional, I understand that there's a level of trust that goes on with that referral. We discuss this all the time amongst the four of us and how we work together. But that's the only thing I can think of, is that they had that level of trust with the mortgage professional and just chose to ignore what the lawyer is saying. But again, Bondo's point is, it were they bother now that they're in this position, are they making a stink about it? It's unfortunate. It would have been great if the financial institution had actually replied to the request for comment. Like any company, they're protecting their butts. Their PR department essentially did respond, saying that we can't discuss the individual's personal matter. And at the end of the day, we're never going to find out what happened, right? This will be buried. It'll be an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, that gets signed or something if it gets rectified. Even if it doesn't get rectified, it's going to fall into yesterday's news because something new is going to come along.
It's clickbait right now, right? Because it's the flavor of the moment.
Yeah,
interest rates went up. People are paying more. That's bottom line. It's like, oh my god, it happened.
But Trev, if I'm, forget about us that are on the call right now, but if you, one of our listeners, or people who are watching us right now, how would they know the difference? Because obviously Bondo, he'd get the deal to close, and he's reading it. He knows the verbiage. He understands. He's reading the entire contract from front.
Sometimes it's not even in there though.
Well, that's my point. So yep. How
usually what I'll do in those circumstances as a lawyer is see, it's usually always characterized as a variable rate on our end. But
regardless, right, Bondo? Sorry to cut you off there, but regardless whether it's a variable or adjustable, in the paperwork you get, it identifies it as a variable rate.
Correct. So what I counsel the clients is to go back to the brokerage to confirm what the nature of their payment is, right? And I always make mention that there's a possibility that this payment can go up with a variable rate, depending on the type of a variable mortgage that you have, right? So, and it's not a passing the buck. It's they're the ones that negotiate that product, right? So I want them to speak. I would refer them back to Trevor. Say, listen, you know what? Give Trevor a call and just get the confirmation from the horse's mouth.
Yes.
So Trev, if I'm going, like if I'm window shopping, which we do not advise anybody. Ladies.
Recruiting going out on the list.
Yeah, Stone Seawitch.
Keep them coming.
I don't want to call her Stone Seawitch. I mean, like, but that's her name, literally.
It's 420 somewhere.
Hey, 420 somewhere. And yeah. Thanks for
No, it's 450. It's 457.
Oh, great. So needed money help for years. Well, you came to the right podcast. So Trev, so
yep.
Okay. So there's some people just don't know. Right. And they're confused and they've got maybe their parents breathing in their ear going, well, when I went and got a mortgage, all I did was go to the bank and I went and talked. Right. So how can I can appreciate that? And, you know, I've shopped around for a mortgage. I've built a home. I know how confusing it is in the very beginning. Like it's a whirlwind. But what are some key pieces when I'm looking at the product of variable rate that I know that it's a capped or that it's an adjustable?
We love groupies.
And we love Dean's groupies. Yeah. Dean's groupies are amazing. Thank you so much.
So
who are we kidding? We're groupies of Dean, so it doesn't really matter. So we have huge man crushes. It's fine. He knows this too. Doesn't matter. all of our wives don't care. It is what it is.
Curry's got a tattoo of him.
Yeah. Do not.
Just like
his ass.
It's like Steve-O has of himself. Right?
Yeah, right.
Steve-O's
exactly.
Got a tattoo of himself on his back. Brandon's got a tattoo of Dean on his back.
Yeah, nah. But I love him to pieces, though. Let me tell you, he's freaking phenomenal. Trev, sorry to cut you off.
So the institution in question that is responsible for this mortgage, their commitment when you're doing a regular variable rate, which is an adjustable rate, does identify itself as a variable on the commitment. However, when you do a capped variable rate, the commitment, when you go under the terms and conditions of the mortgage product itself, it identifies it as a capped rate, and it has the two different rates essentially, because what they do is they set the payment rate higher than what the actual contractual rate is, because the contractual rate, as we discussed, floats with variable. So that institution, again, it's right in the commitment. But other than that, it's pretty hard, right? Because the commitments from, like, you know, the commitment from First National, largest monoline lender in the country, indicates that it's an adjustable rate mortgage. RMG MCAP group of companies, their commitment indicates that it is a variable rate mortgage, but it's an adjustable rate mortgage. So dealing with a professional that knows their product, right? They can speak to it. You know, you're thrown to the wolves in this business, right? Like you're out there to get a sale. And the only thing that I can think of is the banks try and recruit brokers all the time, right? They see a broker as a potential target to get them to come over and deal with them and become an employee of that institution. And they're not very successful, I guess is the best way to put it, but trying to get, you know, somebody like an RBC mortgage specialist to go to Scotiabank or CIBC trying to recruit a Scotiabank employee to go over there. There's a lot of that that happens. And unfortunately, when you're working for that institution, you just, you know, that institution's product, right? And then you get over to that new institution and you're thinking, well, I know mortgages. I've been doing this for 15 years. So it's all good, right? And then you have an instance like this that comes up, and I bet you that mortgage specialist is never going to make that mistake again.
You learn, but still,
I mean, at the end of what drives me absolutely crazy in today's day and age is the gaslighting that goes on with people and the fact that they don't want to take accountability for their actions. At the end of the day, that at the minimum, that financial institution who in question should be ponying up and after they, I'm assuming they've had it in writing, in which case, if you're having these conversations to all of our listeners and to anyone that's watching, make sure when you ask these types of questions to get them to respond in writing, or what I like to do if they're kind of a bit reluctant to do that, immediately after getting off the phone, I send that particular person an email saying, thanks for our conversation today on August 10th, 2022. It was my understanding this is the recap of the conversation that that we just had. Could you please confirm an email? Bullet point is completely fine. Send it off, print that email off and put it into your CYA file. And that way, at least if this ever does come up, you have something in writing that, hey, you did have a conversation on August the 10th, 2022. This was your understanding from that conversation, and that professional or that financial institution, if they don't respond, didn't even correct you or respond or acknowledge anything. So at least you'd have something, but it seems that that wasn't the case. Even though there wasn't an admission that the professional got it wrong. But I mean, $400 a month, that is significant considering in 2019, about 30 to 40% of Canadians were about $200 a month away from having to forego certain bill payments or declare bankruptcy.
See, that's what comes down to now, though. There's like zero repercussions in lots of parts of these industries right now. Like, for example, look at this that I was talking about earlier, 2% increase in 2 months because the lawyer didn't want to get off his ass on the other side of the transaction for it. And then this is the same thing, especially in the build industry right now. We're going through red tape, and Doug Ford says we want to push this stuff through, push it through, push it through. Architects have no accountability right now because they're overwhelmed. So they delay, delay, delay. You're going to the city and you're trying to get stuff for development opportunities. We had one company who advising us to get ready for a development, to get a draft plan done. We've been delayed by 5 months. We're $12,000 a month in carrying costs. That's $60,000. Do we have anyone to talk to about it? No, we're busy. Sorry. Nothing. Nothing. Do you think we want to go back to them next time? No, but everyone's like that right now. It's horrible. I find it just such a bad time right now because it's been 2 years of people in this industries that are burnt out and they're overworked. There's not enough employees for it. And the cost is just carried on to the person who's collecting at the end most of the time, and their profits are just dwindled down. It's terrible.
Yeah, no, and it's driving me absolutely crazy. So I definitely encourage people to really deal with a professional.
My brother's house burned down. Brandon, I mean, I note my file, right? If there's something that kind of different comes about. But I mean, it becomes difficult because you'll be noting your file or CYAing your file on absolutely everything you tell the client. That's the purpose of signing the documents most of the time. And I don't understand where that's gone by way of the doodle bird. Like, when I sign something, if I don't understand what I'm signing, or if I'm not explained what I'm signing, I don't sign it.
It's yes.
Yep.
And see, you and John are amazing at the communication and all that. And the amount of times we've done a deal on closing, and I phone you guys up on closing day, and the headaches from the other side of it from lack of communication just astounds me. I don't know why someone would try any other lawyer other than you guys because of how good you're at that, but
We
talk about it all the time. Like, there's so many headaches on closing. And this is the funny part. People are always bitching and whining about how much the lawyer fees cost on close. like the real estate agents might broker the deal and get the deal together, but you guys are the ones that make it happen. It's the closing on the end, right? And you're going through the headaches of the financing and you know, making sure you have the money coming in and making sure it closes and all that stuff. But it doesn't, you don't find out till close. And oh my God, I can't believe the headaches you guys go through sometimes on close. And just a lack of communication on one side, typically. It's terrible.
Yep. I know. It's pretty bad. It's actually pretty bad.
To Bondo's point, though, like if you go back to one of our first episodes when we came over to the network here, where I shared a story that, you know, clients signed documents, I offered to discuss and to review everything because they claim after the fact that they thought they were getting a fixed rate mortgage product and not a variable rate like we had discussed. And, you know, he was trying to claim a foul to me, like saying that I did something wrong. And it's like, dude, why did you, if this was going to be a problem, why did you sign the paperwork? Like, why didn't you stop and talk to me about it? Like, you signed here, 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 and here, acknowledging you're getting a variable rate mortgage. Like, I'm beyond confused, right? But everybody, when we're in that downward trend, nobody cares. But when we're going up, it's like, who can I blame?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I know you've got a couple. We definitely have a couple questions. I just want to finish this one off.
Yeah.
I'll ask every one of you how many times you've completed a meeting and taking your time and being very diligent and you leaving that meeting, believing that once you leave that meeting, the client's going to remember 100% of what you said.
No, see, this is where Wish said you have to read the papers. I agree somewhat, but you have to understand the papers you're reading. That's the most important part.
Understand.
Because a lot of times you look at commitments for either mortgages or for a real estate deal or closing or even financing papers, and nobody's got an attention span past 140 words these days. It's a tweet or that's it, you know? So when it's a full page of wording, it's boom. You could read it all and say, I don't remember a thing I just read. So it's actually, you know, how do you communicate with them and get them to read back what you said and all that, especially certain key points, like in a real estate deal, there's ones that we always have to go through, and that's why they have initials. But if you're initialing something on any paperwork, it's because there's a defined point right there that could bite you in the ass if you don't understand what it is. So the second you put an initial down, you know, it's way more emphasized that you should understand it, you know? You should understand all the paperwork and you should read it, but ultimately you have to understand what you sign and the implications of what happens when you do sign it.
Yep. So Stone Seawitch says, my brother's house burnt down and he can't, I'm assuming she means he can't get a new house for over a year. Not surprised about that.
Yep. Melissa's saying, sorry to cut you off there, Curry. Yep. I had a client where it's tenanted. The tenants had a kitchen fire and it was 17 months before the tenants could get back in. It took that long for the restoration company to get materials and trades professionals to come in and rectify the situation on behalf of the insurance company. It was a legitimate insurance claim, but 17 months.
Well, and that's wrapped up in red tape a lot too, right?
Like, well, not only that, I mean, these guys are turning to professionals and going, like, who already have their fill in their private practices, Monday to Friday, you know, like 7 to 7 kind of a deal. And they're going to these trade professionals and going, hey, you want to work a Saturday? We'll give you a 10% premium. And they're just like, no. I'm not working a Saturday or a Sunday to do a 10% premium. Now, 50% premium, I might be considered, but why am I going to work a Saturday for an extra 10%?
It's crazy right now. Like, I had guys at my house this Sunday at 7 a.m. grading and all that. And I got home at 3:30 that night, Saturday. And I was like, holy fuck, what is that? They were there 7 a.m. until there's a noise bylaw that I know that I never had in my other house, that we've had the noise bylaw officer in house 4 times in 2 weeks already.
So we've got Melissa saying that she's had a surveyor not come back for over 2 months.
Yep.
So we start
her architect has to wait until the survey comes in. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, for the garage, right? Oh, that's right. Remember that? Melissa, we remember that from the couple episodes ago. You were talking about that, adding on a garage. Sweet about MI. I think it's Michael or... Sorry, it just got cut off. If there's more than that, we apologize. And they hit the nail right on the head here. Someone once reminded me that you are buying a house and also buying money. You're 100% correct. That is going to be statistically the largest amount you'll ever borrow in your entire bloody life. The bank and lender needs you too. That's correct. But you have to learn. You have to read. You have to ask questions and don't think you can do it. And then, of course, that's when Seawitch came in and said, you have to read the papers. Totally agree. That's completely. Thank you very much.
My quote there, you have to understand the papers.
JC.
Yeah. So, yeah, this reminds me of the Office episode. It's you take 100% of the shots you don't miss, - Wayne Gretzky, put in parentheses, Steve Carell, right? Or no, it was, Steve Carell that did that. That's hilarious. Okay. Next one, this is going to evolve nicely. Okay, you have to understand the papers, JC.
There
you go, bud.
As Jesus talking to us.
Thanks, rookie. You're making him feel good. All right, so this is going to get a little bit complicated for anyone that's listening, but we're going to try to really gear it down because you need to understand this. Bondo and nothing to do with the G spot there, Collins. Bondo and I came across this. Trevor, you come across this with approving of financials. We will not be getting into any specific details of the client. I'm stressing that. So bear
Trevor trust looked, agreements. Trevor looked confused when I said the G spot. He didn't know what it was.
Oh God. So bear.
Let's look at.
So basically what we have here is, Bondo and I were chatting. Trevor, you actually did this mortgage. You'll know what we're talking about.
Okay.
And we have a client who needed to purchase a home on their own and needed their, parents as co-signers, and through that, Trevor and whoever closed the mortgage, it was advised on a bear trust agreement. So the skinny version, or the Coles Note version, Dean Blundell podcast groupies. We love it because we're groupies ourselves. A bear trust agreement is essentially Bondo, Coles Notes, go.
Coles bear Notes, trust. What story? Is it? I was still paying.
What attention. Is a bear trust?
A bear trust is essentially creating a trust arrangement, right? So you'll have a beneficial owner in the property. They actually own the property. And then you'll have a trustee in the property. And that trustee is on title for a particular purpose. A lot of times, especially in today's climate, what we see is what we call an accommodation endorser, what was traditionally referred to as a guarantor, right? Banks don't like the whole guarantor, you're not on title anymore. So what they want to see is they want to see that guarantor on title. When you're dealing with that situation, though, the guarantor doesn't want that to be recognized as a residence that they genuinely own. I mean, there's all kinds of tax implications behind that. And there's also liabilities that attach to the property itself over and above the mortgage. They're always bound by the mortgage commitment because they've signed that agreement. But essentially what it is somebody in the place as a trustee for the beneficial owner, as an accommodation endorser, that's to help them qualify for the mortgage. So they're unable to do it on their own. And sometimes we also do it for estate planning purposes. We'll put a child on with aging parents. Traditionally, people would put it on 99% the parent and 1% the child, but then that required probate for the property. So what's come about now is a bear trust arrangement for estate planning purposes as well, where that person goes on titles, say, for instance, with an aging parent. So then the property rolls over to the surviving joint tenant, being the child, as a trustee, and they're able to sell that property without the requirement for probate on that house.
So to everyone that basically
apply for an application to get a certificate of probate.
Right. So right. So basically
that was not closed notes.
So basically the reason for a bear trust the reason for a bear trust is basically it only gets enacted. It's there to put them on title, but not allow that in this particular case, that parent to be penalized if that principal property of the child gets sold as a principal residence and doesn't get dinged as a secondary property, which would be exposing capital gains right. or taxable capital gains. So right. it still allows them to guarantee the mortgage. It still gives the bank something to kind of go after.
Yep. But they're still on the hook for the mortgage. They're on the
they're still on the hook for the mortgage, and they're also on title. So that's what the bank likes.
Correct.
But there's no impact because you're using a bear trust in order to get this mortgage approved. So the child still gets the principal residence exemption, yep. can do whatever they want, and yep. that keeps everyone happy. Now, in this particular case,
before you go on, Brand, if I will. Just because that's the good part of it. The ugly parts of a bear trust could come up as well. Because what happens if you're an accommodation endorser and the actual owner, the beneficial owner, you're the trustee, you've essentially guaranteed this mortgage, they default on the payment. You're still right. obliged under that mortgage document. And then technically speaking, you would have to sue the individual under the bear trust.
Correct.
Right. Correct. So, I mean, it doesn't mean automatically that they're not responsible for the obligations of the mortgage, but at the end of the day, they shouldn't be. What happens if that child becomes judgment proof? You know, then the parent is left holding yeah. the bag.
But they do right. have insolvency. When you say judgment right. proof, right? Go yep. declare bankruptcy.
Yep. Then right. the property becomes seized, right? And
yep.
becomes
Yeah.
So we had a question from Michelle Deckerby, who just joined us on, I think that's YouTube there. Is yep. that similar to a joint survivorship on mutuals or investments? The answer is no. A bear trust is not the same thing as a joint first right of survivorship or when you purchase a property, because in that case, you are 25, 25, 25. If it's joint or if it's joint right of survivorship with, like, let's say your spouse, you're 50-50. You actually have ownership. You're actually on title both in some cases. We learned yeah. that the hard way.
Let me address this one here, Brent. Because technically speaking, you are joint tenants. We do right. register you as joint tenants on title. And that by virtue of having joint tenancy, gives you that right of survivorship, right? So it allows the property to transfer over to the trustee as a joint survivor, but only in the capacity as a trustee, not as a beneficial owner. It doesn't Correct. Change. It doesn't change that person's title as it relates to the transaction. They'll only ever always be a trustee.
So thank you, Bondo. That's exactly what, so I always get really scared when people are like, is this similar to this? No, there's different idiosyncrasies to both. So like, for example, Bondo, you own your principal residence with your wife, 50-50, you're both joint tenants, right? Of first right of survival. Okay. Let's just say you are okay. In this particular case, most people are joint right of survivorship. But in that particular case, right, most people are, you pass away, it's an automatic rollover to your spousal rollover. That's fine. But in the bear trust agreement, to your point, if that ever happens, they're only in the capacity of a trustee of a trust.
Correct.
The trust actually owns.
They don't own that property and they don't
you do own not own that property. The trust owns the property. And that's also for, what we said before, if that child becomes insolvent or declares bankruptcy, yes, there's a place for that bank financial institution to go, but they can't go after the trustee. They go after the trust to seize the property, like, or the parent will pay the mortgage payment or whatever the arrangement is. Now, in this particular case,
they can go after the trustee, though, right? Bank, the bank can go after the trustee, and then that's where the trustee would then have to go over the, you know, and sue the beneficial owner because they've made that commitment to the bank. So regardless of the bearer of trust, the commitment to the bank still stands supreme.
Or they're gonna take away the property. They can 100%. Right? Yeah.
100%. Normally a bearer of trust speaks to the trustee not having any obligations, but being able to start invoking things should the other default.
Now, in this particular situation, Josh and I had to do some research, and it is what happens if the child dies? And the reason why is this particular client, this particular client is doing their will and POA, and which is amazing because 25% of Canadians do not have a will and 50% of Canadians do not have a power of attorney of property or in health. So what happens? So Bondo, what did we find out? What happens if the child in this particular case dies, and the what happens in the trust case? Can this particular person with an ex-spouse, can that ex-spouse then claim the property? You know, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, like, no, I wanna... it would depend obviously on a case by case basis, but generally speaking, the intention is that individual, that property is being held in trust for that deceased individual's estate, right? That's the whole crux of it.
Right.
Right. So,
there is
nobody else has ownership other than whoever is beneficially entitled to a piece of that individual's estate.
So if I'm, let's just use me as an example. If I use basically my parents, and in this isn't the case, but I'm going to use it as an example. And they're the bearer trustee. I pass away. What's the process? It rolls into the trust, and then what happens?
Well, what happens is we roll it. You pass away. We roll it from you to your parents, the surviving joint tenants,
right,
in their capacity as trustees. Right. So then the understanding is, I'd have to double check in terms of the ramifications for if they hold on to the property or if they're able to hold on to the property, and could get complicated if there's minor children. But generally speaking, then they're able to sell that property off under the trust, recognizing that there's no capital gains because it's the deceased's primary residence. And then that money goes into the estate.
Okay, so then it would flow through because the trust would act as another, like essentially a state, and the beneficiary would be the estate of the deceased person, and it would flow through.
100%, because it is the deceased. They're always the beneficial owner,
right?
They're always the beneficial owner. That doesn't change. What you got to watch for though is who has knowledge of the bearer trust, right?
Why is that? You mentioned that when we were talking. Why?
Well, just because sometimes the bearer trust is an agreement that operates and may not be mentioned necessarily on title until you're effecting a transfer from the trustee to the beneficial owner.
Okay, but why would why would it matter if somebody were to ask or to tell someone? If I had that arrangement in place and I told Trevor, what's the big deal?
Give an example. You and I own a property, okay? Yep. There's a bearer, we own the property as joint tenants, and there's a bearer trust agreement which says you own the property and I'm only really the trustee.
Yep.
Nobody else knows about that agreement but you and I.
Yep.
You pass away.
Yep.
I throw away the trust agreement because I'm a dishonest son of a bitch.
Yeah. You're a lawyer.
Right? Go ahead. Then what happens to the interest if I want to say, well, no, I'm a surviving joint tenant. Prove that there's a trust arrangement.
Okay. So what's your advice? Should you tell people that it exists? Like, what should there be a copy?
My
like,
opinion is that you should at least notify one other individual. At least.
Out of curiosity, can you register a bear trust on title?
It's a good question, Trev, and I'd have to take a look at the conveyancing, the transfer to see if I think for sure you can register anything on title. I don't think that as long as you've got an agreeing party,
yep,
you can register it through an application general, right? So,
well, short answer being most likely yes. Long answer probably being the financial institution that the person is getting the mortgage through probably wouldn't appreciate and wouldn't feel title was clean, right? Correct. Making an assumption there.
Yep. I mean, they definitely might take issue with that, right? So, I mean, it's an operation by agreement between the parties, right? Which doesn't necessarily involve the bank.
Right. Okay. So
does that make sense? So at the end of the day, if nobody knows about the trust agreement, there is the potential that, there could be something untoward. But obviously, if you're entering into that type of arrangement, you know, there's a strong belief that that's not the case, because there's ultimate level of trust. And if it's ever proven, you're tantamount to a fiduciary, right? Huge ramifications.
Okay. So when dealing with a bear trust, just to get everyone up to speed, definitely let at least one other party know. Would you advise someone to make reference of that in their will that there's a bear trust in place?
In terms of their comfort level, I think there's, I don't practice in wills and estates, so I'm just going to maybe steer away from that skid, Bren, just not to give poor advice. We could have my colleague on here at some point in time, which wouldn't be a bad idea, and speak to estates and some particularly pointed questions like that one.
Okay. Bren. All right. Perfect. So, just I wanted everyone to, we came across this about a week and a bit ago, and I found it pretty fascinating to kind of start reading up more about it. And like, I mean, you touch on it. I've never needed one. So it was kind of interesting when we were going down the rabbit hole on all the different situations with the client. Obviously I knew what the outcome was. If this particular client defaulted, that was pretty straightforward. I knew that, but what would happen if this person passed away? And I didn't actually have the actual answer for that. So it was pretty interesting to kind of go down this rabbit hole. If there's any questions out there, people that are watching or listening, please feel free to go into the comments and ask. Yeah. We're coming almost to the end of this episode for another, we got another 20 some odd minutes, because we do have all meetings this afternoon for going live. So I guess what we'll go to now is Collins, just so we can keep you awake, because somebody was at, oh, I'm on. Yeah, that all came in. Don't know.
That's clear to you, Curry. That's for you.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, yeah. So Collins, your little tip of the month. Oh, that's a bot. Okay, thanks, Rookie.
Figured that much.
Hi, bot.
Hire a professional mover if you're moving. That's my tip of the month.
Absolutely. Why would you move?
Yeah, why didn't you do that?
Good luck finding one on short notice, buddy.
Very hard.
If you go back to previous podcasts, you've been building this house for about 19 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've got stuff going. It's 5 years now going on.
Would we say 19 years that he's been building this?
It feels like it, 19 years.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Building this house. So short notice.
And make sure you understand the bylaws in your new area.
Okay.
Sound bylaws I've never come across before, and now it's a nightly thing here. It's awesome.
Somebody's got to be a dick in your neighborhood.
We had literally on the Friday night of the long weekend, it was like last weekend, I was sitting in my hot tub listening to music on a moderate amount. At 11:10, the bylaw officer was at our front door.
You got a dick in your neighborhood?
Oh, we know who it is now. I got the address and everything because the grader got called on it yesterday and he drives right over to see where the bylaw officer car is and who she's talking to. So we got the address. I know everything now.
Unreal.
I'm sure you had neighbors in the old neighborhood that, you know, they were just level, level headed.
Hear anything, so
yeah.
I don't understand neighbors. Listen, I love Metallica. I try to be the best neighbor I can, man. I try to be friends with my neighbors, right? Hello, good morning.
How are you? What I do, like I live in an area where there's lots of parties and stuff when it's a student area, and I sleep with a fan on now just to block out any little noise in the background, right? And you don't hear nothing. But this is the problem. We got grading going on and heavy machinery. There's a bylaw. You can't operate it after 6 o'clock. So instead of having it done in 3 days where it's nice out and when the rain comes, you can't do anything. They'd rather delay it for 2 weeks every day rather than 3 days of good weather. Because heavens forbid, 6:30, you know, there's a little bit of noise, you know, 200 feet away, knocking trees down.
It's terrible. Like,
how am I going to listen to Wheel of Fortune? You know, it's ridiculous.
I feel
bad for these guys because you've got grading guys who can't do anything in the winter most of the time, right? So they've got a minimum amount of time. Yep. And then if it's summer, you know, you've got longer extended hours, you know, like, come on.
Yeah, we had a buddy of ours right across the street here was building a shed. To spec and everything. Some jackass calls the city. For what?
Yeah.
Because one of your neighbors is building a shed in their backyard?
This is the problem on my house. My house has got 14 yards on the right side of the property. And when the engineer for grading designed it, on a new house, you're supposed to have a swale in your own property because there's got to be water management on your own land, right? And we're dealing with this in Dane City. And this is the point where you and John might get involved or someone you recommend because it's getting ridiculous. But the engineer designed all 14 swales in the backyard on my yard. Okay, so there's no swale at the back of the yard. They unload their water onto my yard. My setback is 11 feet from their yard. So I've got four houses that directly unload their water when it rains or a sump pump onto the side of my property. So with no grading, you know, grading's everything on a house, right? So if there's no grading, the water comes in on there. So I cut a swale at my cost, 650 feet long down the side of my property. And so at the back of everyone's property, it slopes right away so that the water doesn't sit on my property or on their property and gets carried away.
You got a catch basin there?
Well, the catch basin's way at the back of the property, right? So like 700 feet away. But everybody's just up in arms because, and I'm like, it's none of your fucking business. It's on my property right there. And I'm doing it to protect your property because the grading is not done right on your property. But the engineer said, too bad. I didn't think there was going to be a house there when you built it. So for me, I think there's I could go after stuff. I don't want to. I just want to get it done, move in, go on with life, and find out who I gotta have fun and play the bylaw game with or whatever. It's so petty. It's ridiculous. You know,
give somebody purpose, though, right? Give somebody purpose. They feel
so. We'll go with Trevor on his little tip, and what do you obviously besides the dealing with a professional broker and holding people accountable, which we kind of made pretty clear, but go ahead.
Yeah. Biggest thing is if you're in a variable rate mortgage right now, ride it out. You know, unless you're in that financial position, it doesn't make sense where interest rates have climbed to.
What do you think happened September 7th?
I will give you a better predictor at the end of this month. So
September 7th, you'll tell us.
No. So our next episode, so those listening, watching right now, we'll recap it again at the end. We're going live 11:30. Our groupies, yeah.
So the Trevor Lindy prediction will be live next episode.
August 30th, 11:30 a.m. Or shortly thereafter, depending on some technical issues. the reason I say that is because at that point we will know where the CPI comes in at for July, which will be a huge indicator. Like if it's up again, we were 7.7 in May, which got reported in June. We were 8.1 in July for, excuse me, got reported in June 7.7, which was May's numbers, 8.1, which got reported in July.
Tell the audience what CPI means too.
Canadian price index. It's inflation.
Is it Canadian or consumer?
So, but here's some good news. Just came in this morning. CPI in the U.S., inflation in the U.S. is lower than expected as of today's recording, or if you're watching us live as of today. So July came in lower than economists' prediction. So there is a tightening that's happening on the spending in the U.S., which is a good sign, considering that would allow Jerome Powell, who's the Federal Bank chair, to maybe reconsider a 75 base point hike in September. But that's what you're referring to, Trev. Our CPI data comes in towards the end of August as opposed to the beginning of August, correct?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, and that'll be an indicator. The next meeting is September 7th. So only other point, only other point I will make is over the last couple of weeks, because of unknowing predictors of what's going on, obviously what's happening with the U.S. Federal Reserve and kind of slowing down because we're seeing numbers soften. We've seen the bond yields, which drives fixed rates, come down. So in the last, I want to say 2 weeks, we have had rates go from as high as 5.49 for a 5-year fixed, less than 20% or 35% or more 25-year AM come in.
Qualifying at 7, right?
Qualifying at 2% over the contract rate because it's in excess of the 5.25 benchmark. But we're down now to lenders as low as 4.59 for that same less than 20% down. So we're seeing a softening. And if I could predict right now what's going on, I think that they're going to hold steady for the September 7th meeting. But again, until we have July's numbers,
I think we also have a summer of revenge right now where nobody's done anything for 2 years, right? So that's going to also affect what sales are like. So it's not just the interest rates that went up. People are just out doing sports and camping and concerts and everything. Everything we've talked about, we've all done, right, this summer. Yep. And everyone's right. Like that so, right now.
So what we had a question come in from Stone Seawitch. Okay, I bought a house at 2.79% in August of 2019 on a fixed rate. Seawitch, if you could let us know, what was the term? Just so I can kind of gauge that, because the rest of the question is I'm wondering how the future interest rates affect that, or will there be enough time for things to drop a bit? But we just don't know the term. I'm assuming it's a 5-year term. So that
would
be
my assumption, just because statistically so many people go that route.
2022 already, so it's got to be 4 or 5 years.
So to put this into perspective, I locked in October of 2019 at 2.6% on a teaser rate for 5 years. I'll answer it based on what I think and my constant conversation with Trevor, which if we don't talk daily, we talk definitely every couple of days. Okay, perfect. 5-year term, she confirmed. So what that means is I'm expecting 2023 for rates to go down. Once they tame inflation and it's you know, either on a steady decline or it's been capped and they're happy with the nominal interest rate, you know, the inflation rate being where it is, then I do expect a slow but surely retreat in 2023. So you coming due August of 2024, my advice is 6 months out, right, Trevor? Speak to a mortgage broker and start kicking tires on what the options are and what the rates are, unless you want to throw in anything else, Trev.
Yeah. So the lock-in period is anywhere from 3 to 4 months ahead of time, prior to maturity. The existing financial institution may be able to do an early renewal greater than that time period. But to Stone Seawitch's comment question, it's a lot of people don't realize this, how cyclical we as Canadians, like our financial institutions, to U.S. federal elections. I've been doing this since January 2008. And if you go back and you look at 2008, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, and what has happened to interest rates during all those time periods, we have had a softening. So my one, again, kind of the other prediction about December, I don't think we're going to see an increase. We're coming into U.S. Color C-Witch for short.
Color C-Witch for short.
So we're coming into a midterm election right now. So for House and Senate control of the U.S., that's November. I think we're going to see a softening. So 2024, anybody that's in that threshold, my gut says you may be fortunate enough to be back at that level. I think the people that are going to be hurt most is those that got in, you know, 2020, 2021 at the beginning, when we had like rates at 1.5%. You know, when I tell you in 2016, I was saying to clients, like we had rates at 2.34%. I remember doing transactions, 224, 234, 234 kind of being the median, and saying to clients, I don't think we're ever going to see rates this low again. And then 2020 happens and we have rates even softer than that previously. So at a 279, I think you're probably going to be fortunate enough to be somewhere in that, you know, 2.25 to probably 3.5, 3.79. I'd love to see if I've got a crystal ball on this one, because if I do, I think I should change my profession a little bit and work on retiring.
So another question. All right. Any basic thoughts on how investments will be impacted? I took a shit kicking recently on some of my pretty moderate risk stuff. Great question. Sorry, that was the question. No, that's fine. Yeah. Here's where we're at. The moderate, so basically, and moderate is typically balanced. That's the balanced typical portfolio, 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. If you're moderate or if you're in a balanced situation, absolutely, more than anybody, you took an absolute shit-kicking. And the reason for that is because going back, God, for 20 to 30 years, the balanced portfolio typically withstood these types of recessionary, you know, or interest rate increases. The problem being is we're getting hit double whammied. So you've got your stocks getting, you know, hammered. And then you also, because of the drastic and quick interest rate increases, your bond yields are going absolutely nuts. So your bond prices are falling, because as interest rates increase, bond yields on the open market increase, which means your bond decreases in value because there's higher interest bonds out there. So they become less desirable. Now, with regards to what I'm seeing, good news. I do think we hit the bottom, notwithstanding anything, any other you know, unforeseen circumstances, i.e. potentially, you know, the tensions that are building between China and Taiwan right now. I don't know what the heck's going on there. So based on current economic conditions, I do believe the stock market has hit its bottom. And to that point, when we did our monthly mail out to all of our clients, we found out that the S&P 500, as an example, between the middle of June of 2022 to the end of July of 2022, rose 12.8%. So that was an average. Everyone's going to be somewhere along that spectrum, depending on what you're invested in. So that
June, right, Ben?
Middle of June to the end of July, the S&P 500 as an index went up 12.8%. So depending on what you're invested in and whatever, you should be like looking to see that 1 month trend. You know, maybe you're like 7-8%. Maybe you're, if you're in higher risk stuff, you know, like nine, you know, maybe it could be 16-17%. It all depends.
Yeah, I'm high risk, but, and I think I'm down probably 15-16% of my portfolio.
Right. So, I would then the classic here, I guess I'll do my little tip and then I'll go on to Bondo just because this will all roll into one. Stay invested. If you don't need the money anytime soon, you're investing in your future, either through a tax-free savings account, an RRSP, or even just a general checking account. Maybe you're saving for, I don't know, a trip or purchase, whatever. If it's more than 3 years away, just stay invested. This is where you actually make the most amount of money, is buying the dips, buying the lows. It's the only industry where people sell when prices go down and they don't buy. It's absolutely crazy. She's not moving. This is retirement funding. I'm not in need of it. Perfect. Stay invested. Michelle, stick to the strategy. If that's your risk tolerance, being a moderate or balanced, stick with it. And that strategy, depending on who you're with your, the professional that you're dealing with, just do it. She just retired. Okay. But you're not in need of it. Perfect. Okay. Seawitch. Whoa, I didn't know the rates got that low. We live in NS where housing went insane. Same here in Niagara. Thanks for the info. Helped the anxiety, and we'll make sure to call the broker. Call a broker. Speak to a broker. And that's, you know, because we are under different, like Trevor hinted at, we're under different legislation. Typically provincially legislated as opposed to federally regulated, like the big banks. And so a lot of their employees are protected underneath their big, massive institution. They don't have the same requirements that, for example, Trevor does, or when it comes on the investment side, I do, and the disclosures that we have to make. Bondo, your little piece of advice?
Instead of a piece of advice, I got a little bit of a rant.
Bondo rant. I love it.
Get some water.
Is this about technology and podcasts?
This is about Capital One. And I'm going to chastise Capital One for the time being.
Yes, we want some rant background music, Rookie, please. Hold on. Let Rookie work his magic.
Yeah, for sure.
I almost feel like it's going to be Rocky music.
Didn't it? Maybe. I don't know. Let's see. We haven't had this before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man,
seductive rant music.
This is seductive rant music. He's hello. You got to do it in your deep voice, there, bud.
Do it in your Carlo voice.
Do it in the Carlo.
Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel from Niagara.
Oh, where's Vin Diesel when you need him? Oh, there you go. Okay.
Capital One. Realistically, I'm having an issue with them right now on behalf of the client, and I'm actually embarrassed about it, right? I've got a conference call today at 1 o'clock with the client and with Capital One. We paid off, as part of a refinance, a Capital One credit card over 2 months ago. They still haven't cleared it from his account.
So Capital One, step up. Step up your shit.
2 months. Now, this guy's got automatic payments coming out and everything, and it's still showing a full balance. The check was negotiated 3 days after we mailed it.
What are they telling you?
All the ombuds.
Seriously, we don't care. It's not our problem.
Just to your point about some institutions, right? And I'm not fully chastising Capital One right yet, because I've got a conference call with them today at 1. So,
Everybody passes the buck, right? That's what it comes down to in those situations. Passes the buck. It's not my problem. It's yours, right? And
not everyone does that, but the ones that do it, they stand out pretty bad.
We feel like assholes, right? Because it's our good client. It's our good client, right? That we've got a good rapport, and he's looking at us, or they're looking at us saying, what the hell is going on? And we're going like, I've been practicing for almost 20 years. I haven't seen this.
Yeah. Oh, this is more and more recent now, right? This is commonplace. It's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, things happen, and let's just hope that, you know, my update to you is that things went over smoothly. And
Well, you're going to update us on Tuesday, August the 30th when we record. And we're going to record, I think, when is
it? We got it scheduled for 11:30 a.m.
Eastern Standard Time, not you know, Seawitch, that's Nova Scotia. Don't we have that an hour to Nova Scotia time? So that's gonna be like 12:30 p.m. Nova Scotia time. So there you
go.
Are
we going to do the podcast after dark with a bunch of booze in us at my house or what? Get some real.
We might all lose our careers if that's the case.
Or we could just go through the roof with ratings.
It might do, actually. Yeah, podcast after dark.
Trevor drives his RV over.
All right, so Michelle's in Central Standard Time. So that's 1 hour back, I think. So that'd be like 10:30 a.m. your time on Tuesday, August the 30th. Regardless, we got a really good one. So if we're going to do one after dark, we got to like loop in Dean and the crew because that would be hilarious because that would be really funny. And I do. Say, yes, Michelle, I've got the bar.
Collins does not have the bar.
Yeah, Collins does not have the bar, but I do definitely have the bar. And
so I've got that much booze. I don't know. I've got pretty close to that. That's it.
So on the Tuesday, August the 30th, we're trying to nail down Alenka Lyle from Clariderma, principal, co-founder of this a great skincare company. We're huge proponents. They're also great lady.
My wife, I like that.
And her business partner, Alicia Yap, as well. And they're going to talk about, wait for it, Botox. That's right. Scrotox. Botox for your scrotum. Why? I don't know. So if there's any men listening, maybe tune in, maybe not.
Let's do it to support them.
Yeah. Well, give me a break. Collins, give me a freaking break. You're going to get a needle in your nuts, yet you won't get a vasectomy.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it'll improve the look of my nuts, apparently.
Dear mother. So, let's
just be clear,
dear
though.
God, you're telling me, Michelle, try having that conversation over a dinner at a business meeting.
Uh-huh.
I'm asking. She's in our business group. Someone call Locke. Right. Literally, like, this is going to be really interesting. So any of Dean's crew that wants to like log in and just ask a ton of these questions, this is going to be a funny episode. I think we're going to have like the entire hour and a half.
What would she tell you the purpose of it is? It to make your balls not hang?
Well,
why don't we all tune in on August 3rd?
My assumption would be to take the wrinkles out of those suckers, Jeff, right?
But, so does it hang down to the knees anymore? Because I know when it hits the 40s,
Does it dangle to and fro? I don't know.
Do they cut the extra skin off and just tighten it up?
It's Botox for your scrotum. I don't know.
See, the funny so that anybody listening or watching, Curry
I'm looking this up right after
the
this.
Guests coming on. Yeah. So I really think that this is probably something he has interest in, and he's just using his platform.
He Googled on his phone, and it's been on his phone for 3 months, and now he's brainwashed on it.
Right?
How do I improve my scrotum look?
Saw the scene when she brought it up. He was so excited.
What?
I'm with Collins. I don't know why anyone would want to do this, but I said, you know what, you two ladies should come on. It's great because we're huge supporters of their business. Like, we think they're amazing.
I have a couple drinks for this one.
But so this is going to be can you time in a bulb? Yeah, we'll see. do they dangle to and fro there, Michelle and Melissa? I don't know.
Can you throw them?
Lachlan needs more of a ball type than smoothing of the wrinkles. That's freaking hilarious. They had this for JJ's. Yeah, so she's going to touch on all of that and even the stuff that you can do elsewhere.
Vag talks.
But you can also do, like, I guess you could, she was saying, I won't ruin it, but you can, like, take some of your plasma and then inject it into Big Jim to make Big Jim bigger. I don't know. I'm not too sure.
Looked into all this.
This is the stuff that we're like, you want to talk about first world problems. This is 100%.
It's not going to be like monologues, I don't think, but I think it'll be.
Yeah. Anyway.
This has got to have a coming soon Scrotox talk this August
30th. Oh, no. Rookie's all over that. Like 100%. Like, I think this should be like a, I don't know.
The second phase of our podcast, because if we lead off with that, no one's going to even care about anything. We should just dedicate the whole to that.
And just so you guys know, we do actually have a guy named Rookie in the background. He's like our producer, Tim, from TSN, just so you know. Works his magic.
Hey, Rookie,
thank you. But we're gonna wrap it up. We're at our time. Everyone that's watching and commenting.
Sorry, we got to get Rookie to put up the comment from Sea Witch there. You lure me in with money and mortgage help and then hook us with balls. Nicely done.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Bait and switch.
At least we're trying to help you take care of your balls.
Yeah, right.
I'm my whole rest of the day is done. I'm going to be researching this. I want to know what the hell this is.
This
I'm
is gonna
tell, I just told my kid I can't go to his party anymore. I got to research Scrotox.
I bet you did. Did you tweet him? Him and his 136,000 followers?
No, I don't want to double him. He's already got a swelled head.
Okay.
Can he retweet one of our things to promote the Scrotox episode?
I don't know, he's 13. There could be like
I think every guy should tune in and just kind of squirm, and every female should tune in and just laugh your asses off on watching all four of us and any other guest that wants to come on just die like a slow death. Yeah, Scrotox. Yeah, Scrotox. I'm not even joking.
What happens now if our ladies are demanding this from us because you brought this up?
I'll kill you.
Yeah. Listen, we're helping out here.
He won't let a needle near him to get fixed. He won't let the needle near him to get rid of his wrinkles and sag.
I like my wrinkles and sag.
August 30th, 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, August the 30th, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Scrotox episode.
Scrotox, the Scrotox episode.
Be there.
Give some love to your balls. That could be the whole tagline.
I don't know.
Self-care. Improve your
self-care.
Balls.
Manscape. It's all about the manscaping.
Reverse
package.
Time. We can.
Okay, I think so.
All right.
Okay. Don't neglect the balls. That's right, Rookie. Thanks. Thank you to Rookie for producing the show. Thank you to the Dean Blundell Network again for having us on. Bondo, take us out.
Help us. Help you.
Fix your balls.
And I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jag and Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Hear ye! Hear ye!
Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.